Jeff Calkins is columnist of the Daily Memphian and also hosts the Jeff Calkins Show every single weekday right here at 92.9 FM ESPN from 9 to 11 on X. Very conveniently, Jeff_Calkins. Jeff, how's it going?
It's good. Now, I'm on a walk through the woods, so if I'm out of breath, it's not me breathlessly waiting for Hard Knocks. It's just because I'm on a walk.
Do you at least do you have somebody with you, or is it just you randomly walking through the woods?
Me.
Okay, all right.
It's just me. It's literally just me.
Don't get lost. The Michigan wilderness can be
a
strange
path.
Place.
There's a pretty well established path here.
Good.
We were. I've said this before. I'm only up here because we're trying to preserve the great outdoors from some bazillionaire who's trying to pave it and knock down trees, and so I had to be in a courtroom all day today. And so I'm getting some steps in, you know, and trying to get a little bit of fresh air. The legal system, you know, it in a movie or on TV, it looks sort of riveting. In real life, the wheels of justice turn slowly.
Yeah.
And this is sort of.
What's the bazillionaire trying to develop?
It's not so basically. We have had a house on this a house on a lake. It's a cabin. It's got no air conditioning. It's got no TV. It's
right.
A cabin on a lake that my grandmother and grandfather built in the 1930s. And there's some other houses along this road, and accessed by on this lake, accessed by this basically dirt road. And so a bazillionaire bought one of these houses, and he's like, "Hey, do y'all want to pave the road and widen it?" And we're like, "No, it's been like this for 100 years.
Okay.
We don't want to actually widen the road and pave it and knock down a million in trees. And if you do that, then the city code kicks in such that you need to have an entranceway to the road that meets good to the, you know, with giant tapers where you can accelerate. It's supposed to be a quaint little road in the woods that feels kind of magical when you get to it, and he's trying to turn it into a roadway. And so that's what we're fighting about.
So he's trying to develop a road. So he's trying to do, yeah. I mean, there's something there. Okay. All right.
He would say he's trying to improve the road, and the argument he's making is for fire safety. But he was trying to improve the road within a couple years of buying the house and never mentioned fire safety. Until he finally, a year ago or 2 years ago, hit upon this. Wait, we need this to get fire trucks to the house, like that. So
yeah.
Anyway,
well, I hope it works out for you and the people on that side,
and the trees and
yes.
The great outdoors.
No doubt. All right, now we just got done, Connor and I, talking about what we expect tonight on episode one of Hard Knocks for the Buffalo Bills, for your Buffalo Bills, and we did ask this question. And I know you probably do not like this question that's headed your way, but we set the over-under at 20.5 of Chiefs and or Patrick Mahomes mentions. Do you think we blow through that by the end of the series? And I'm not talking tonight. By the end of the series, how much do you think that the Chiefs, number 15, all that is mentioned?
20 mentions of
20
Chiefs
and a
and
half,
Mahomes.
So 21 beats it, 20. 20, you're all safe on the under.
So if Brandon Bean is talking about it and he's being interviewed, he says, "Listen, of course we want to beat the Chiefs. You know, we want to get the Super Bowl.
Yes,
you know,
that's
a
mention.
We know that goes through. No, and we know that goes through Kansas City. Is that a second mention?
No, that's one. That's one mention.
So he can talk for 5 minutes about beating Kansas City and the need to beat Kansas City,
yes.
And that's only one mention.
Yes. Yes, that's the topic is approached.
I think under. I'll take the under. Under 20.
Yeah, but I feel like that's sort of going to be the through line of this you know, the plot.
I mean, let's be honest.
This season.
Yeah. I was just talking to John Martin about Hard Knocks, and he was saying he's not even going to watch, that it's lost so much juice, which I think is true. It's lost a lot of juice that he wasn't even interested in watching. Of course, my answer to that would be, what else are you watching tonight? Like, come on, man. So, but I agree with all of that. So then you're like, what is interesting about the Bills? And what's interesting about the Bills is Josh Allen is interesting, right? I mean, he is he's one of the five biggest stars in the league. I think people fundamentally like him. So the more you can have Josh on camera, the better. And then secondly, the whole story of the Bills, this would also be true if it were the story of the Ravens.
Yep.
Right? Is particularly for those two teams, it's will they break through? Can this be the year? They have nothing to do but you know, get to the Super Bowl and then win it. And so that will be the overarching theme. I don't think it will just be Chiefs related. I think we'll hear about the goal of getting to, you know, getting over the hump, finally getting the Super Bowl a lot. Sometimes it will be in the context of, can you beat the Chiefs? But not exclusively. I mean, hell, they lost to the Bengals in the playoffs, you know. But that will be the overarching theme. And then you'll have smaller things like, I suspect, the James Cook holdout will be prominent.
Be there.
Or hold in. And then I think I'll predict Tre'Davious White is the corner who was a longtime Bill, was actually selected with the pick in the year that they gave up the pick. You know, they got the pick from Kansas City to select Tre'Davious White, and then Kansas City selected Patrick Mahomes. Tre'Davious White was a really good Bill for a long time. They cut him last year because he was hurt. He played, bounced around the league, and he's back, and he's a good talker. I bet that's a subplot, is Tre'Davious White. But that would be my bet.
The personality. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, it's Josh Allen, the need to get over the hump. It's going to be James Cook. And then I'm going to predict Tre'Davious White will be a big one. Deion Dawkins.
I was going to say, I think Deion Dawkins is the personality play of this season.
Huge, yes. He is a huge personality play. And then you might hear last year at the stadium in Buffalo. You know, you'll hear there'll be some people jumping through tables, don't you think? Even on games, even on week one.
Yeah, they're gonna have to get Bills Mafia, whoever the head of Bills Mafia is, or if you know the.
Okay, will a chicken wing appear? Will a chicken wing appear in tonight's telecast?
I think a rookie will be eating it. Do you know what's one of the famous Buffalo wing places?
The Anchor Bar.
They're gonna have some rookies at the Anchor Bar throwing down on some wings, and I'm sure that the ranch blue cheese thing comes up.
Oh God! Oh God! It's a little predictable.
Well, how do you feel? I mean,
is that training camp isn't in Buffalo? Training camp is in Rochester, down the road at St. John Fisher College. So that's a little different.
Yeah. Why do you think? Like, I think I agree fundamentally with John Martin's take about it losing juice. What do you think is the biggest culprit? Right. I think you could say, you know, there's not a lot of teams that want to participate anymore. That's one thing. And I think when they do participate, they sort of, you know, rule the director and whoever's sort of getting their film. What they want to show, what they don't want to show, is, I think that's become pretty clear. I think the one thing I would point to is, like, the human element. We don't show guys getting cut anymore. We show guys making the team. We don't show guys getting cut. I think that needs to cut both ways. No pun intended. But I think that's what I'd point to.
I mean, first of all, I think all this stuff is a little old hat, right? We see much more inside locker rooms. I mean, hell, every team does their own videos now about inside this, inside the draft, inside, right? Everyone's doing all this. So the access is a little more old hat generally. But then in addition, the access to this has been tremendously watered down because we don't see, as you point out, we don't see people getting cut. And I think teams have said, all right, if we're going to do this, we need to exert even more control. Honestly, it's what made the Giants offseason one last year so fun, was because we hadn't seen that before, right? And they obviously screwed up in terms of what they let us see, right? So that's what made it interesting. I'm sure if they could go back and do it again, they wouldn't. And by the way, the Bills didn't want to be a part of this either. It's just the NFL used to say if you'd made the playoffs, you didn't have to do it. And they said, screw that. You still have to do it. And so the Bills were roped into it. They didn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Now, moving on to some Tigers. We had the coaches poll come out yesterday. And the Tigers received 34 votes. And I think they were in 34th or 35th, something like that, if that's what you do. I know that there's people have been laughing because of the Memphis Football Post with RV on it, right, saying receiving votes.
Are you deeply offended?
I'm not deeply offended by that. I mean, you know, here's my take, and Connor probably could parrot this take because he was a part of a sports information department. When you have something worth selling about your program, you're going to put it out there. Like, it doesn't really matter what it is. I don't think Ryan Silver, I don't think, like, the way John and Brad were talking about it yesterday is as if they thought Ryan walked up to the department. It's like, did you guys see we receive votes in the coaches poll. Make sure you put up a graphic about that. That's not how that works. I don't think they take some tremendous pride in it in that locker room. But go ahead.
I was on with John yesterday, and he acknowledged, indeed, said that Ryan absolutely had nothing to do with this. Right?
Okay, good.
So that's very clear.
I know, but the debate in itself, I thought it was a bit silly.
But it does raise the question. Was it at least a misjudgment? No big deal. But no one cares, right? Let's establish. Right. No one gives a flip, right? No one cares. Having said that, you use the phrase worth celebrating. Their point is, it's nothing worth celebrating. It would be as if, you know, Oklahoma wouldn't do that. It's not. The point is, again, not a big deal. Who cares? But if you were telling the sports information person, if they came in and said, Gabe, hey, we got votes, should we put out something that sort of celebrates the fact that we got votes? I think you would have said, No.
My answer would be, sure, what the hell? That's what my answer, yeah. It's a.
I can see that too. It's no big deal.
Yeah. That's what my answer would be. I just found that conversation kind of interesting.
Is it an accomplishment at all?
No, I mean, I think what I talked about yesterday off the top of the show is what makes it an accomplishment. Because it's not going to project them at the top of the – you're not projected at the top of this conference. Or you're not necessarily going to finish at the top of this conference. You're not necessarily going to finish with receiving votes in a coaches poll or an AP poll. But I think what it does show me is – this team lost quarterback, running back, tight end, every wide receiver, three offensive linemen, nearly every starter except for one on the defensive side of the ball. And there are coaches out there that view this program, even with all that, and the uncertainty and the unknown, view this program as a top 25 team. That, to me, in itself, is a bit of a win and kind of interesting because you see this program's viewed as a brand with consistency that people are willing to stake and bet will be a top 25 team and will have success, even though there's all that movement around them. Like, that to me is what this told me. And I thought that was pretty cool in itself. I didn't really hear people.
I agree with that 100%, and it was a topic, not that precisely, but the idea that the brand has changed such that it is now assumed that Memphis will be, you know, will be one of the relevant group of five teams and be worthy of, that is absolutely the accomplishment. And
right.
And not only is it just an accomplishment for everyone who's been a part of that program, I think for Ryan specifically, it's also an accomplishment because I think, you know, Ryan doesn't get he can get battered around a little bit in the media. And I think it's about everything this program has done over the last 10 years, but it's also about the fact that people, sure, he has greater resources than Memphis has ever had, but there is a level of respect an assumption that he's going to get the job done, find the right people, deploy those resources in the right way, that I think you have to give him credit for and that is deserving of respect. I mean, it's just true. I don't think Memphis I don't think its brand is quite Boise's. But in terms of group of five teams, it's right there. Right?
I would say this. There's a level of, like, the benefit of the doubt that Memphis is now receiving year in, year out, in football. I think it has, it's not quite Boise, but it's pretty damn close.
Quite.
It's second among any group of five, group of six program in the country. There's just a benefit of the doubt that does not exist very often at that level, and Memphis has it.
No, even take Tulane, for example. I don't think that I think Tulane is, you know, is the nature of the program right now specific. You know what I mean? I think it's, but I don't think people, Tulane is not as respected a football program as Memphis is, because they haven't done it as long, because they haven't done it through, you know, multiple coaches at this point. And so I think you're right. Boise is the one group of five team that you'd say still edges Memphis. Is there anyone else?
I don't think so. And that's
right there.
Herein lies why I took a completely different approach than just about everybody on this station. I find that commendable and worth celebrating in the end of the day. And worth the post that was put out on Memphis football's behalf.
I don't care about the post.
Right. Okay. But again, worth celebrating.
I'll say this, though. The post doesn't have any of that context.
Sure. I get it.
It's just the post could be read as, we are celebrating finishing 34th.
I understand that.
You supplying the context gives reason for why it's actually notable. Same thing, by the way. If they were to go to a bowl game this year, that is not worth celebrating, right? Going to a bowl game is not worth celebrating. Going to a bowl game from what would now be
12 straight years
would be, that would be worth celebrating. So it's the context that makes it worth celebrating. But going to a bowl game this year on its own, no, I'm not going to celebrate that.
What's the full, like, okay, what is
winning six games for this program is worth celebration? No.
Okay, then let's talk expectation. What's like the end result of this season that is full on worth celebrating, right? Since we're talking about what you should celebrate.
Worth celebrating is winning the damn conference.
Okay, and that nothing less.
It is an accomplishment to get to the. Listen, I will sell that you should celebrate. If when you qualify for the championship game of the conference, that moment will be worth a celebration.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
When they find that moment will be. When you look back at it, I still think you'll be pretty satisfied. You did something that you haven't done before under this coach. You've done it before. But so that will be something worth celebrating. You can certainly celebrate individually all the time as you go along. But in terms of big picture, anything short of getting to the conference championship game is not worth celebrating. You can celebrate if you beat Arkansas. That'll be fun, right? But in the end, anything short of getting to the conference championship game will not be worth a celebration. Yeah. Big picture, and the season is over.
Yeah, no, listen, I think the expectation is to get to the championship game every single year. That's what the resources tell us they should be doing. I get that. I think there are things along the way worth celebrating regardless of the situation. I don't mind the receiving
along the way. I celebrate a first down, man. There's no celebrate an interception. Yes, you celebrate those things along the way. And by the way, it is more forgivable
right.
In terms of what your expectations are every year, the expectation should be to go to, sure, the conference championship game or compete the conference championship or whatever. But if you've won it 2 years in a row and then you don't the third year, that's a little different than if you've never done it, you know, under this coach. And that's why the expectations, weirdly enough, do I expect them to go to the conference championship game this year? I think it's, you know, it's what they sort of have to do the next thing. But is it actually my expectation? Like, I expect to finish this walk. You know, I expect that. I think it's a pretty good chance I will. I think it's about a coin. What do you think the odds are that they're going to, in terms of your expectations, do you think they will go to the conference championship game?
I know this is not what odds makers say. I think they should be the third highest odds to win the conference this year. That's my opinion.
So that means you don't expect them.
I think Army and Tulane, or not Army, Navy and Tulane should be ahead of them in that conversation.
So then that's who you actually expect. You don't expect Memphis to go to the conference championship game. They don't play. That's not a three-sided game.
It's not. That is true.
It is what you think they should ultimately accomplish, but you don't actually expect it this year.
Yes.
I
mean, this schedule does lay out pretty favorably, though.
Lays out beautifully.
Yes.
You got the tough games at home.
You got Tulane. You got South Florida Navy at home. Like, they're... of all the years under Ryan, and I know that there's a lot of turnover and a new quarterback, it feels like from at least a schedule standpoint, this should be the year. But we've said that before. Last year was supposed to be the year as well. I get that. So, my gosh. It is kind of funny.
We're going to the playoffs. You know, last year at this time, yeah, we were talking about expectations to go to the playoffs. Yeah.
You know what's funny about this season more than seasons past, even under Ryan, is like I have gotten multiple questions from people that listen to the show, from friends. Hey, what do you think about the team this year? And I have nothing else to say to them, Jeff, besides I have no earthly idea.
How would you
how do you expect me to know something like that? I don't think, like, and I get the sense, and this is not just Ryan. I think there's multiple coaches that deal with this. I heard Mike Locksley at ACC, or not ACC, Big Ten Media Days, Maryland head coach, say the same thing because they have to turn over the roster. I think there's no way Ryan knows exactly what they're going to look like by the time they roll out against Chattanooga. Like, if you asked him before fall camp, I don't think he has any earthly idea what this team's actually made of. There's no way of knowing.
How could you possibly, right? How could you? It's the same thing with Penny, you know?
Right.
Now, Penny might have a slightly better chance because there's fewer moving pieces, right? So he has a you've never seen them do it. You have no – if you have a core of veterans coming back, then you can have an level of expectation. I think it would be one of the terrifying things about this. You're literally – it's not just about the fact that you have to assemble it every year. You have to assemble it every year and then, like, wonder if it's going to fly. You know, like, how's this going to go? Like, you got no idea. What do you put your faith in? You know? You know, it's tough. You know, start there. You know, start there. So it's a very different deal.
For sure.
Get the big bucks.
Well, Jeff, I'll let you finish your walk. Appreciate you joining.
All right. See you.
Yes, sir. He's Jeff Calkins, @Jeff_Calkins on X, Daily Memphian columnist. Also host of the Jeff Calkins Show 9 to 11 right here, 92.9 FM ESPN. Okay, so that expectation conversation with Jeff got a little bit convoluted, I will admit. Do I expect this team to make the title game this year? Not necessarily. Like, there are a couple of teams that I would throw over top, right, Connor? I think that's what we're looking at. An Army, a Tulane, sort of a little bit more understanding of what they're running out there and what they've been able to accomplish in the past couple of years. Tulane's been in three straight title games. But when we talk about what they need to or should accomplish by the end of this season, I think that's what I'd still say. An appearance in that game, no?
I agree. I think that because you have to look at it with the context of what Memphis football is now, and they haven't made it to that game in a while, and it is too long since they have been there. So that is the expectation. I understand that there are a few teams in the conference that might be predicted to get there because of different reasons. You know, I do think that one of them is absolutely going to be there, and then you're kind of in competition to be that other team that will make it there. But I think that the point that you made, the schedule that they have,
favorable,
very favorable, and I do think that most people will look at this season with disappointment if they don't make it to that title game, because it is hard to have conversations about being that team behind Boise State when you haven't even been to your own conference championship game in a while. And that to truly be that number two team, or to truly be the cream of the crop that is left, you need to be having the success of making it to that championship game.
Yes. When you have the resources Memphis has, there's a built-in expectation of being in that game, winning that game, quite frankly. But I do think, like, there is a little bit of short-sightedness when it comes to the amount of resources and the transfer portal additions and the recruiting that Ryan does. When we talk about the resources they have on the football side, just excluding full athletic department, I think they sort of not lap the field, but they're pretty close to lapping the field in the American when it comes to basketball and football.
100%.
But in football, I have it on pretty damn good authority. In fact, I know this. South Florida and Tulane are spending the same amount of money on their football roster as Memphis. Now, one always exceeds expectations, you know, gets that title game, wins it, Tulane. We know that. One, South Florida, is consistently behind the University of Memphis and is not reaching what we would view as a level of expectation they should reach given those same resources, right? So, like, it's kind of – it's interesting to me the conversations that are had about where Memphis football needs to be by the end of a season as opposed to the teams that are peers in NIL, in rev sharing, in their same conference. Because there's one that's just innately and consistently below them, one that has been higher than them for the past 3 years,
yeah,
at the very least. I think it's a more nuanced conversation that is made of it every single season.
Yeah, I think it is absolutely more nuanced. And that's why last year, I think we've talked a lot about how last year should be viewed. And ultimately, we landed on it was a really successful season for Memphis football that should be celebrated to some extent. But it is also okay for those that say it was a bit of a disappointment because you didn't make it to that championship game or win that championship game. But the way that the season ended with the amount of wins that you had, beating a Big 12 opponent in a bowl game, those things matter. Those really matter, especially at a school like the University of Memphis. The conversation that we had yesterday, I do think matters in the context, and that is part of the nuance here. 12 or 13 years ago, this wasn't the expectation, but it is now.
Right.
And that right. shows the level now, of progress Memphis has made.
Now, I do want to approach John Martin and Brad Carson's conversation from yesterday, the receiving votes thing. Are we past celebrating that? One, I think it's a social media team. You know this better than anybody.
Yeah.
You get something that is even halfway worth celebrating, you're throwing it on social media, making a graphic.
Yeah, I can.
The other part of this, though, is it wasn't that long ago where you're missing bowl games and you're under Larry Porter. Like, it's been 11 years.
You weren't just missing bowl games. You weren't even close.
It's been 11 years. So, like, are we truthfully past the days of celebrating something like that, that some people could view as an accomplishment, some people could view as,
so
who gives a damn?
Were they celebrating it?
Not necessarily.
That's where I'm kind of like, listen, I worked for the Memphis SID office. I was the SID at Rhodes. This wasn't the football team.
Right. Ryan did not walk up to the SID and say, we received votes. You see it?
Any inkling of positivity you have about a team, you turn into something. And here's why. Recruiting, donations, ticket sales.
Yes.
That's why they put that graphic out. It wasn't because they were celebrating.
Okay.
It's because
That the context of that matters.
It matters. That's why I don't think that Memphis was throwing some parade in the athletic department because they got – but I'm going to be honest. It feels like they put out a graphic that said receiving votes. You can make fun of that if you want to.
By the way,
but we also don't have to pretend like the football team was like, look what we accomplished.
Yeah. Can I give some advice to the graphics people at the University of Memphis for the football program? Type out receiving votes next time.
The RV.
Don't put RV. Yeah,
the RV like was pretty funny.
That was a little much.
But
just type out receiving votes.
It felt more to me like we're pointing out that they receive votes and we're trying to have some positivity during the offseason where there's really nothing going on social media or in athletics. They are desperately trying to find content for the website and their social media pages.
Correct.
Sign someone who quite literally had to do this. You're diving into anything.
Anyway.
And again, it is for ticket sales, it is for recruiting, and it is for boosters. That
Correct.
Is why they put out that
and
graphic.
And then I will say, regardless, like, let's just remove all that. Remove the post.
Sure.
I think, based on everything I have said about the receiving of votes and what it means and the context of it, I do find it, well, not some end goal. The end goal is to be ranked in the top 25 at the end of the year when you play games.
Which they were.
But I think when you put the context of what they're doing and what they've had to do in pivoting from Seth Hennigan and an entire team, and they may only have 5 returning starters, I think it's worth celebrating the idea that Memphis football is a brand that coaches and media members give the benefit of the doubt to when it comes to the top 25. The view of this program compared to what it was, 12 years ago to me is 100% worth celebrating. Becoming a brand in that spurt of time, that period of time, becoming a organization that is stable enough to really have people assume you're going to be great, going to be good. That to me is worth celebrating.
Listen, if
that's context added to receiving votes in the coaches poll, no doubt.
Yes. I want to give people the viewpoint of what the SID office is doing.
Yes, for sure.
It is during the summer. There is nothing going on. People aren't on campus. Sports are not going on. At least your major sports aren't going on. You are trying to fill your website with anything. I also made, at one point, receiving votes posts for Rhodes. I did.
Right.
And I wasn't instructed to do it by the football team. I wasn't instructed to do it by the AD. You're doing it also, this is going to sound a bit silly, but it's the truth, for parents.
Yep.
You're also doing it for football parents because they're always checking the website. They want to see new stories up. There isn't some celebration going on, and we shouldn't be celebrating that they receive votes. I do think that we can talk about the context of Memphis football's history and why receiving votes, deserves at least some sort of mention. I think that pointing it out, it being on their website and there being a graphic, was made too big of a deal.
100%.
It just wasn't a big deal either way. But I do think that a conversation about Memphis football's history and how far it has come in 12 years, 13 years.
Very much worth having.
Is worth having. I just think that some people made a little bit too much that Memphis, they're celebrating it. I'm telling y'all.
Right.
In the SID office, they were like, oh my God. We were given a gift. We were given a gift. There was receiving votes. Let's make a graphic for it. Let's put a story on the website for recruiting, for ticket sales, for boosters, and for the football parents. I am telling y'all with almost certainty
that's what happened. 100%.
Because 100%. I did it.
No doubt. All right, now we need to hop into a trip around the National Football League. So we'll go ahead and do that next right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. We have to take a trip around the National Football League, even though it's going to be a bit abbreviated today. Connor, hit it. The Cleveland Browns, they're going to start Shedeur Sanders coming up on Thursday. We already talked about that, or Friday, I should say. We already talked about that because Kenny Pickett and Dylan Gabriel are hurt, and Joe Flacco's 40. They don't want him playing in the preseason. But the Browns, on top of that, signed Tyler Huntley, Snoop Huntley, Lamar Jackson's former backup. Why? Can I just ask that? I know you're down some bodies, but they're going to be coming back relatively soon. You already have four guys, and like the idea out there is that they can't carry four active roster quarterbacks because no one in the NFL does that. Why are you bringing in a fifth? And at that, why are you bringing in a fifth that has no business fitting into your scheme? You run this under center, run heavy, play action scheme. Tyler Huntley fit in with the Ravens because he ran the ball really well, and he was at least a semblance of what Lamar Jackson could do if Lamar Jackson was out of the game. So I just don't understand this, but I think this sort of fits in line with what the Browns do. I don't understand really anything they do. It doesn't have a rhyme or reason, and that's why you have a coach and a GM likely on the hot seat, and they may not get out of this season. On their first depth chart of the season, the Jaguars are listing number 2 overall pick, Travis Hunter, as starting wide receiver and second string cornerback. What do we think about this, Connor? What do we think?
Makes sense.
I think it's
makes a lot of sense.
Sort of what I mentioned when he was going through the draft process. I think it's a lot easier to find situations to insert him on the defensive side of the ball. You rotate corners, you rotate D linemen, you rotate guys, especially with other teams playing tempo. You can get subs in. On offense, you generally roll with what you got. You don't do a bunch of situational subs in and out. So I think this makes sense. I still expect him to play very heavily on both sides of the ball. But it seems like, sorry, I apologize. It does seem like they're going to skew most of his snaps to the offensive side of the ball. Now hit it again. Saquon Barkley was apparently picked by President Trump to be a part of his presidential Fitness Council, is that what it's called, Connor? Have you seen this? A Fitness and Nutrition Council. And Barkley said that he's not going to be able to do it. So he's denied it. He said, a couple of months ago, it was brought to my team about the council, so I'm not really too familiar with it. I felt like I'm going to be super busy, so me and my family thought it would probably be best, in my best interest, to not accept that. I was definitely a little shocked when my name was mentioned. I'm assuming it was something great, so I appreciate it, but was a little shocked when my name was mentioned. I just have to mention something when it comes to these councils that President Trump's putting together. How come everybody that he appoints gets asked about it and they're like, I had no idea. What are we even doing? Like, I just, something notable, I think that's worth mentioning. This is another one on top of Nick Saban, top of Cody Campbell, on top of all these guys. Oh, who was it? Lawrence Taylor for the College Sports Commission. All of these guys are like, what are we doing here? Why do you need me? So just want to throw that out there. Teddy Bridgewater is no longer going to be coaching Miami Northwestern. If you remember, about a month ago, Miami Northwestern put him on suspension because he was paying for meals for his players and extra equipment and all of that stuff. So he's been put on suspension. He stepped down from Miami Northwestern as the head coach. He's going to sign with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to be the backup for Baker Mayfield. Pretty good plan by the Buccaneers. They, you know what? Something that does not get mentioned enough. They are a very level-headed, smart franchise. And the way they have operated the past few years is damn impressive. They've been the king of the NFC South, and I know that that's a bad division, but they've been the king of the NFC South. They've won a playoff game. They have rehabbed Baker Mayfield. They have drafted well. It's been impressive to watch them operate. Jason Licht, all those guys deserve a lot of credit. The Rams have extended Kyren Williams, their running back. 3 years, $33 million, $23 million guaranteed. Rams, get this. The Rams drafted Kyren Williams in 2022 and Puka Nacua in 2023 in the fifth round. That was back-to-back years. Over the last two seasons, Williams is tied for the most scrimmage yards, most scrimmage touchdowns in the NFL, and Puka Nacua is fourth in the entire league in receiving yards per game since 2023. So that's good drafting as well. To be able to find diamonds in the rough in the fifth round, that's something. As far as like the amount of money Kyren Williams is making, I don't think that really bothers me. Making $11 million per year, $23 million guaranteed. I think he's earned that. And he's just sort of a workhorse back. And it's becoming harder and harder to find guys like that. And the Rams trust him. Works well in Sean McVay's system. No notes. Absolutely no notes. But that will do it. For a trip around the National Football League, we have small talk on the other side. Make sure you stick around for that right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. And small talk is brought to you by Conway Services. Reputable service available 7 days a week. First of all, do want to mention, if you play College Football 26, mascots are being back or put back in. And Pouncer is going to be back in. Coming up tonight, I believe, is when the update hits, or it already hit.
It may have. I don't have the game yet, so it may have already hit, but Pouncer's going to be in the game, so that's good news.
I got you. Now, I have to take you into one of my plans, you know, this weekend. On Saturday, it really wasn't a plan, I shouldn't say, but I golfed. And then I came home, and horrible. I shot horribly. I had been playing so well, and then I got to this weekend, had a little scramble with some friends, and was absolutely atrocious. One of the worst rounds I've played in my life. But beyond that, I get home, take a shower, and my wife and my kid are out of the house. They're with one of my wife's friends, and they're having lunch and yada, yada, yada. So I'm sitting on my couch, grab myself a plate of food, and then I'm deciding, okay, I'm going to watch a movie. And I go through, like, all of the entertainment apps. I go to Netflix. I go to, Prime. I go to everything. But I ended up on Prime and I found this movie that was trending. It's called War of the Worlds. Now, War of the Worlds, of course, former, great movie back in the day, yada, yada, yada. But this one was with Ice Cube. It was starring Ice Cube. I'm like, you know what? Let me give it an opportunity. And I start watching it and it's just honestly one of the worst movies I've ever seen. So I get about 15 minutes in, and I'm debating. I'm like, should I turn this off? Should I not? I'm like, you know what? Let me give it a chance. Let me give Ice Cube a chance. Apparently, this movie was on delay. They've been waiting to release it. Let me just get through it. So I get an hour and 37 minutes later, which was a complete waste of time, get to the end of the movie, and my wife finally returns home, and I turn to her without knowing any of the reviews because it was brand new, I think, on Saturday. So I turn to her as soon as she gets home, and I go, I just wasted an hour and 37 minutes of my life. I just watched the worst movie in the history of filmmaking. And she goes,
it's barely filmmaking.
She goes, you've got to be kidding. No, yeah. Like that's not a realistic take to have. And I go, I'm not joking with you. This was the worst piece of crap, and I didn't use crap, that I've ever watched in my entire life. So we get, you know, done with that. We have dinner, go to sleep. Next day I wake up and it comes across my timeline. War of the Worlds starring Ice Cube debuts at 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. And in their write-up, Rotten Tomatoes, because the tagline of the movie is War of the Worlds, it's worse than you think. The film's tagline, this is what Rotten Tomatoes wrote, the film's tagline, it's worse than you think, sums up the entire movie, and I couldn't agree more. Could not agree more. But apparently this one was delayed during COVID, and it went through a bunch of processes. They tried to get somebody to pick it up. Prime Video picks it up. It gets released. Connor, I almost want you to watch it. No, listen, I want you to watch it just to see how bad it is. Just to like really feel how horrible it is. It's almost so bad it's worth a watch.
There's no chance in hell I ever watch this movie.
You're like, you will not. Not even the first 15 minutes just to get a feel for how bad it is.
No, that's
15 minutes of your life.
I feel like I have a feel for how bad it is already. I mean, I've seen some clips on social media, and it looks horrific. The funniest thing that I saw someone say was, the entire movie feels like Ice Cube is reading the script for the first time. Like, he just got it, and he's reading it for the first time. It's barely a movie. Isn't it like he's on his computer
the whole time? He works at DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, and he is on his computer checking drones and looking at like things outside of his office.
Insane. So here,
and he's like leading his daughter. He puts her at one point. He puts her in a Tesla and self drives it using his DHS software. I'm like, this is like, what are we doing? How is this real? How did people talk themselves into making this movie? First of all. Completely destroying the good name of War of the Worlds, by the way.
War of the Worlds is a valuable IP. You know, it is.
Sure.
It is.
They disgraced it.
Yes, they did. Orson Welles was rolling over in his grave, probably, when this movie got released. But if you are interested in War of the Worlds, there is the October 30th, 1938 broadcast of War of the Worlds that Orson Welles did. You can find it on YouTube right now for free. It is awesome. It's
sure.
So cool to go back and listen to. I recently listened to it, actually. And, you know, people thought it was real when it was happening. They had no, because it was the first time anything like that had been done. So when people were listening to it on October 30th, 1938, they thought the world was being invaded by aliens from Mars. Now, and the movies are the real movies are great. Like the Steven Spielberg one is so underrated. I think it's an excellent one with Tom Cruise. So go watch that. Don't give your time or attention to this movie.
No, but I'm wondering, Ice Cube, he's a very successful human being, successful actor, all that. Why would he want that out? Like, did he think, I don't know. Like, the hit to the reputation could be worse than the money.
I'm gonna be honest. It's one of those things where, like, I don't think it's going to be tied to him whatsoever. It's more of it's just a misfire. The idea of it is kind of interesting. Somebody following the invasion from a central location on social media. They've done movies like that recently where it was all done on a computer screen and social media and Facebook. And those movies have been at least a little bit successful. So I understand the idea of trying to do it with War of the Worlds. It just sounds like it was a really bad script and the director did a terrible job. This is going to be tied more to the director than it will be tied to Ice Cube. Because people understand an actor's an actor. A ton of actors that are some of the best of all time have horrible movies on their resume.
That's fair.
Ice Cube has enough goodwill with the public, it's going to roll off of him.
I mean, and for God's sakes, The Rock has flopped like 15,000 times.
Exactly. And he might be nominated for an Oscar this coming year with the movie that's coming up. So the thing that what's actually going to happen here is the movie is so bad, people are going to go watch it. Because that's it got that 0%, it's actually going to be
It's going to work the opposite way.
The No Man's Land is being like between like 10% and like, I don't know, 60. It's you don't want to be there. If a movie's so bad, sometimes people will be like, maybe I'll check it out, and it will become a game. Like, let's watch this terrible movie, and every time something happens, we can take a shot or something like that.
Can we debate whether or not I'm a psychopath for finishing it without even knowing what the Rotten Tomatoes percentage was going to be? I had time on my hands. I didn't want to waste it like that, but still, I stuck through the whole movie, opening credits to closing credits.
I usually try to go into a movie relatively blind by not seeing a trailer outside of like the teaser. I don't know the last time I saw a movie without at least knowing what some of the opinion was or if it was going to be worth my time.
I don't
time.
Think the opinion had come out yet.
Brother.
It had? On Saturday?
I mean, way before. People, it was one of those where I saw early last week people saying like the worst movie of the year is on its way. And Gabe was like, guess what I did on Saturday night?
I didn't see any of that. I didn't see any of that, and I watched it and then saw it afterwards
honestly,
on social media that it was a 0%.
Just start, before you start movies,
just type in.
Just shoot me a text.
Okay.
Just shoot me. Just be like, is this safe?
I honestly, though, I'll be honest, I don't regret it. I don't regret
it. Sounds like you've been a little bit.
I watched one of the worst films ever made. I can carry that till my dying day. Not
good
a good thing
you.
To carry.
Good for
but,
you.
I can carry that. Hour number three is on the way, and we're going to open up hour number three talking with who I talk to every single Tuesday at 6 o'clock. That would be Christian Fowler from Bluff City Media. Make sure you stick around for that, 92.9 FM ESPN.